You're listening to the Philadelphia Independent Theatre Podcast with hosts Christopher Munden and John Rosenberg. Our special guest this episode is Brian McCann, a talented and versatile local actor. Brian started by telling us how he came to be in Philadelphia theatre.
My people come from Philadelphia. My grandparents, great-grandparents, and so I would come up and visit Philadelphia and take a look around, and these were the Rizzo years, so it was crime-ridden and filthy, and I did not like it at all. And then I went away and came back because someone asked me to come see a show of theirs, and I saw it, and it was wonderful.
When was this?
I'm not good with this. But this was when Jen Childs was in that awful automobile accident. She didn't have insurance. And the theater community rose up and they helped pay her hospital bills. And I thought, not only was that wonderful theater, and I've heard that there's more of that, but there's a wonderful community that's very supportive of each other. And I said, I want to be a part of that. I auditioned for Comedy Sports while I was living in Wilmington, Delaware, and I didn't get in. In fact, I choked so badly. And so a year later, I moved to Philadelphia, and they were having auditions again. And not that I was really stoked to be a part of Comedy Sports, but I wanted to slay that dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in, and I slayed that dragon, and got a part in Comedy Sports.
15 years later, you're still with Comedy Sports.
Still working with Comedy Sports.
How often is that show?
That is every Saturday night at 7:30 and 10 o'clock.
At the Adrian.
What is it that you like so much about, like Comedy Sports or just improv in general?
I think it keeps an actor very, very sharp.
Yeah.
You hear all the time, listen to one another on stage, but you don't really understand what that means until you're doing improv. When you're passionately listening, you are grabbing everything that the other person says, like a dog with a bone.
Your whole act depends on
everything
what the other person
depends on listening to what the
stage,
other person
yeah.
does. We have this wonderful thing at Comedy Sports where we say that your only job is to make the other person look good.
I know you had an interview recently with Montgomery
right.
News, and
right.
I think that was the one where the lady was very interested in the fact that you do this Comedy Sports, and you also do Shakespeare a lot.
Yeah, she did her homework. I was very impressed, actually.
But is there a common denominator?
I think there is, as I said in the article.
Is there something that one gives you that the other doesn't?
There's certainly that, yes. In improv, the world is your oyster. You can literally do anything. You can go to the moon. You can do anything. With Shakespeare, you are in a box. You are very tightly restricted. I am a rather militant about the language. I don't add an or a sound if Shakespeare didn't write it.
Right.
But in that box, I find a tremendous world and a tremendous amount of freedom and really quite enjoy just saying the words.
So what
the marriage of
together?
The two,
yeah,
the marriage of the two, I think is that a lot of people think of Shakespeare as Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. On a pedestal, should be honored and quiet, and everyone behaved themselves, audience-wise. When he was doing it, it was the most raucous theater crowd you could possibly imagine.
Right.
Literally pennies and fruit and people screaming, and there was a lot of audience participation, and ergo there was a lot of improv. I love that Shakespeare always puts that comedic element late in the play. There's always that need that the audience feels. We've had so much death and carnage that it's nice to have just that little lift, a few moments of being able to laugh.
And there's a lot written about, you know, the similarity between Shakespeare's comedies and these tragedies. So you have Much Ado, where, you know, for a long part of it, you could easily see that veering off into tragedy.
Yes.
And Romeo and Juliet, where
It's
just one or
funny.
Two changes, things work out a little better,
yes.
And it's a comedy.
I once heard, and I think this, I really like this idea, that any one of Shakespeare's plays is a comedy until it cannot be any longer.
Hmm.
Even King Lear has humorous moments that should be played as humorous moments for as long as you can, because trust me, in his tragedies, we're going to get there.
So King Lear.
Yes.
Brian played Lear in a high school production for Germantown Academy. So he was the only non-student actor.
Wow.
All of the daughters, all of the cast
Everyone
were the
else.
Students.
Everyone. It was just the most enjoyable thing that I've done with any school. The kids were amazing.
Was there anything that you got to tell them that you would have wanted someone to tell you in high
when
school?
When I was a young man, yes. stillness. Young actors always want to gesture with every word, and if someone had told me that at a younger age, I would have appreciated that. Take it to heart, because, you know.
Was there anything you learned from them?
It reignited my passion, the excitement that they feel before the curtain goes up. I'm excited. I'm always, you know, excited on an opening night, but they are exuberant. They have enough energy to light a small city. It's infectious.
What parts or what plays of Shakespeare have you been in?
I once counted recently. I've done 15, here's 37, so barely scratched the surface. A few I've done twice, which is...
which ones have you done twice?
I played Prospero twice, which is really delightful. I once played it for Villanova University. They were in the same boat. They had no one old enough to play Prospero, so they brought me in to play. Which was fantastic, because I got to play it again last season with Curio Theater.
It's an excellent job, yeah.
Thank you. It was a joy, because I had already played it. It was already rattling around somewhere in my brain. I just had to find it again. The Villanova one was a deconstructed version.
What do you think of that tendency to do that with Shakespeare? Like, say, I always picture him being a movie scriptwriter and pitching his movie scripts, and the producer, the director, being like, "I love it, Will. I love everything about it. That's really great.
However,
we set it in the Civil War or 1920s.
Well, I have no doubt that not all of Shakespeare, as we see it, even in the first folio, is how it was presented.
Sure.
He wrote it. It was never put down. It was never compiled until after he was dead. We all know this. For me, modern-day concept, quite frankly, if it gets a young person to realize that Shakespeare is fascinating, I am absolutely okay with that. He wrote the jaws of his day. Titus Andronicus was, without a doubt, the jaws of its day.
Yeah, I see it. Bloodbath. The Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction.
Yes, exactly.
Because that was one of his early plays.
Yes, and you can see it.
It was one of the most popular during his lifetime.
It was.
And I can picture like that coming onto the Elizabethan scene, and it just being like when Tarantino released Reservoir Dogs, like, who the hell is this?
That's a much better example. Yes, Reservoir Dogs.
What is he going to do next?
Yes.
And there's yet to be a really great production in Philly, but that is a great play.
That's true. Yes. I would like to see it done in the theater exile, Lieutenant of Inishmore style of just buckets of blood by the end.
Yes.
Like, it would be phenomenal. And just have audiences scream.
But yet, like McDonough does, take the characters seriously.
Yes, yeah. I wouldn't camp it up, but buckets of blood.
It's already camp enough. It's already
it is. There is a bit of a wink and a nod. Yeah. I love Julie Taymor's version, the film version. I thought that was really fantastic.
Anthony Hopkins, is it?
Yes, Anthony Hopkins. Yeah.
The first thing I remember seeing you in was Lieutenant of Inishmore.
I quite enjoyed Lieutenant. It melded my love of stage combat and physical comedy.
Was that Matt Pfeiffer?
Yes, it was.
He was the first director in Philadelphia that I find myself, it's like, who directed that? And looked it up, and it was Matt Pfeiffer. A couple plays later, I was like, who directed that? And looked it up, and it was Matt Pfeiffer.
I've worked with Fife quite a bit. And my next show is actually with him. It's Theatre Exile's Bruce Graham's world premiere of North of the Boulevard, and Fife is directing. So we start next week on that.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
When is it going?
A month from now.
So what I think makes him good, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion, is his attention to all the minor relationships. When I see his plays, I feel like he can have vignette scenes between two characters who aren't the major characters in it, but those scenes work really well, and that really brings something to the entire production.
I had not worded it like that, but I completely agree. Lieutenant Vinishmore, that's not a huge role. Mm-hmm. Integral, but we had serious rehearsal time with that. I never feel like I'm wanting for Matt's time, no matter what the role is. So even smaller roles, you're absolutely right. There is very serious time spent on the dynamic of the two characters and what everyone's feeling in the room.
And
he's a passionate director. He is, he really, there's never a time where I've seen Matt just sitting back and whatever, you know. Or
what are his comments like? What are his notes like?
He's very precise. He's very, very much a laser beam on moment to moment. He will take a simple interaction, a two-line interaction, and say something along the lines of just, what is it that you want to know from him? Get that information.
What's Northrop Boulevard about?
I would say that it is Bruce Graham at his finest. It is takes place here in Philly, in a garage. He writes very much like Breaking Bad, where you're laughing your ass off, and then on a dime, you've got tears in your eyes.
Yeah.
I think Bruce Graham does that beautifully well. And talk about an East Coast sensibility, a Philly sensibility. That is what he writes. These are working-class, blue-collar guys with big problems.
So you don't write or direct, or you're purely like an actor?
I have written a few things. I've written a few comedies. I've written a full combat show that was all the fights of Shakespeare. And I tied it together with comedy.
Brilliant.
And obviously I did it with a lot of humor in the scenes because it was two guys. So if it was Taming of the Shrew, it was one guy dressed as a girl. Comedy.
Yeah.
Was that produced?
Yes, it was. It was produced in Philly Shakes. Right here. That was probably about 5 years ago now.
Okay.
Still have the script, still could do it.
Do you get recognized?
I have. Yeah, a couple of times. There was one that sticks out of my head. I went to go see Cirque du Soleil when it comes to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And my parents, it was their birthday gift to me. And so we get our tickets and go up and, you know, it's in that big tent and give the ticket to the person that's going to show us where we're going. And he rips the ticket and looks up and goes, "You're Brian McCann."
Wow.
And my parents are standing right there.
Let
me just say, my parents are standing right there.
Yeah.
"Oh my God, I saw you in this, and I don't know," and he lists several things. He was at University of the Arts. I don't remember his name, I wish I did, because I feel like I should pay him something.
Because
my parents sat down and were just looking at me like, I think it was the first time that they said, "This is not just a little hobby that he's doing."
I think you validated them having you as a kid.
So. I really should have paid him money. That kid just slipped him a 50 and said, "Thank you. Thank you so much."
So you never get mistaken for the other Brian McCann.
There's a couple of other Brian McCanns.
Atlanta Braves.
The Atlanta Braves.
Catcher.
Yeah. You also have the guy that writes for Conan O'Brien. Spelled exactly the same, so I'm assuming that if I go equity, I will have to change something.
Are you interested in going equity, or it's...
Yes, I am.
What's this the is attraction one of the things, and what's the drawback?
The economy is in a slump right now. And I work a lot as a non-equity actor. We need an older actor, but we can't afford equity, but we can afford...
Brian McCann.
Yes, give me Brian McCann. But going equity, you know, then you get the insurance, such as it is, and you also have that team of lawyers behind you that if anybody tries to do anything underhanded, that'll be taken care of for you. But I think I need to wait for the economy to come back up before I make that big step, because it is typical, if you go equity, you're not going to work in Philadelphia for a year. So I've got to be on pretty stable footing for that to happen.
Okay. That's just a few stupid questions. Like, you as an actor, what do you expect from a director during the process?
What we do is considered by 99.9% of humanity to be the most scary thing that could ever happen to a human being. Spiders, snakes, heights, bullshit. Talking in front of people is considered the scariest thing by most of humanity, actors included. So while it is a mutually collaborative process, someone needs to be at the helm. Otherwise, you are adrift. And I have seen so many productions where you see there's five different plays going on up there. That's the director's fault. If you see a production that has one person doing Commedia, one person doing, "Ooh, what a muse of fire," and another person playing completely modern.
Is that how you played Lear?
That's how I did it. That is the director that has not been the rock that they need to be.
What do you expect from a director once the show has started?
What do I expect? Really nothing. If they have notes, they give it to the stage manager. The stage manager gives it to me.
So you don't want to talk to the director?
I personally do. A lot of these directors are my friends, so I will pick their brain. But technically, they're not allowed to. I'm not equity. So there's no rules against me.
Oh, say equity, you're not allowed to say
not,
shit.
Exactly. You're not
once
allowed to
opening
say
night,
shit.
That's it.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask for something as a goodbye. Our revels now have ended.
Really, you want that one? It's been a while. Our revels now are ended. And these are actors, as I foretold you, are all spirits and are melted into air. Into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve, and leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Thank you.
Do what I am again.
Do what I am some notes.
I won't take them, I've already opened.
What's wrong?
Thank you for listening to Philadelphia Independent Theatre Talk with Christopher Munden, John Rosenberg, and special guest Brian McCann.